Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, December the 14th, 2023. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And Ray Pritchard.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
It was good to see you in person on Tuesday.
Listen, I always enjoy those trips to Tupelo and, you know, the radio, the board meeting, the big Christmas luncheon. Hey, it's a treat.
Now, you and Marlene drove back. When did you get back into KC?
We left Tupelo on Tuesday after the board meeting, drove to Jonesboro, Arkansas, spent the night, and then got in here to Kansas City about, I don't know, about 1:30 yesterday.
There's just that road from Jonesboro to, what, do you go to Springfield?
Yeah, Jonesboro to Springfield. And, you know, go up through the mountains, right through the Ozarks, you know, and you see a little bit of the heart of America there, twisting and turning, you know.
It's beautiful, but you can't take your eyes off the road.
Well, that's right.
Or you're going to go down a hillside.
That's exactly right.
Or if you're vulnerable to car sickness.
Oh, yeah.
I have witnessed that.
Yeah, it's definitely windy all the way through there. And I guess till you get to Springfield to KC is pretty.
That's
is that an interstate? Is that an interstate?
From Springfield, the road changes. Once you get from Arkansas to Missouri, it gets a little bit wider, and then it gets really nice from Springfield up to Kansas City. That's a straight shot.
Driven that many times over the years, we used to go up. We've been up to, the Lake of the Ozarks.
Right.
As guest of the BOTS. Bot Radio Network.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good friends of ours, and they have a place at the Lake of the Ozarks. So we've driven that many times. And then Alice and I drove from Tupelo to Omaha for the College Baseball World Series about 3 years ago.
Yep.
We did that. So didn't have time to see you there, Ray. We were
you were on your way.
We were focused.
Well, listen, it's the World Series, you know. You got to get there.
I remember getting back from that trip, which took us through, I don't know, 7 or 8 states, maybe 9. I don't know how many we touched, but I remember getting back and I told our staff here, I said, you know, there's one thing I've learned on this trip from Mississippi to Nebraska and back, and that is this. This country is never going to run out of corn.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That's an 11-hour trip from Tupelo to Omaha.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, and there's a lot of corn. You go right through the corn fields to get there, too.
Yes, and there's a reason Nebraska is known as the Corn Huskers.
That's right.
Man. All right, then. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We are scheduled to have Senator Ted Cruz on next hour. So at 11:05, that's when he's scheduled to be on. So you never know with congressmen and senators when they're going to have to reschedule or cancel or whatever. So we're hoping that will take place. We had Ron Paul on the other that's his daddy. We had Senator Rand Paul there on the other day, right, Fred?
Yes, great interview. And he's got a new book out, and it's all about Dr. Fauci and COVID. And a great interview coming up with Ted Cruz because he's going to talk about wokeism in America.
Yeah. Best time to get a senator on that you want is when they write a book.
Yes.
Because they want to be on your radio program to promote their book. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very hard to get them on. So
that's those guys are very busy.
They're very busy, unless they want to sell books.
That's right. And that's a different thing. So we welcome Senator Cruz.
That's America, people.
that's America, baby.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, hopefully we'll have Senator Ted Cruz on in at the top of the next hour. Chris, before we get to the news, I wanted to discuss with Ray, and you guys feel free to chime in, because Hanukkah. Ray, around Christmas time in America, we often hear also Happy Hanukkah, or the Jewish people are celebrating Hanukkah at the same time we're celebrating Christmas, we being Christians. What is Hanukkah?
Well, to understand that, you got to go back before the birth of Christ, back to about 165 BC. there was a period there when there was a Greek ruler by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes IV, which just means Antiochus the Shining One. He called himself Theos Epiphanes, God manifest in the flesh. Most people, from a Christian point of view, we read about Antiochus Epiphanes, and he's the Antichrist of the Old Testament. As bad a guy as you will ever find anywhere. His story is told a little bit in the book of Daniel, chapter 11. For about 6 years, this fella, Antiochus Epiphanes, took over the city of Jerusalem, took over the temple, brought in perversion into temple worship, sacrificed a pig on the altar there at the Old Testament temple, called at that time the Abomination of Desolation. Some of our Bible students will recognize that. Well, it got bad. It got worse, bringing in terrible moral perversion into the Jewish religion and into the city of Jerusalem and defacing, blaspheming the temple in Jerusalem. And there arose some Jewish patriots led by a man named Judas Maccabeus called Judas the Hammer. He's a great man. In Jewish history, you got to read about Judas Maccabeus. He rose up, led the Jewish patriots to retake the city of Jerusalem, wrested away from Antiochus Epiphanes. Well, they did. It was a tremendous battle. They won the battle, Tim. They got the temple back, but it had been defaced by these by Antiochus and his followers, and they cleansed the temple that the Jews did, and they wanted to relight the menorah, the candelabra inside the temple, but when they lit it, they discovered there was only enough oil to light it for one night. And according to the story that's been handed down, the oil in the candelabra, it did not go out. It lasted for 8 straight nights. Okay? And it was taken to be a sign that God was blessing the purification of the temple and the reestablishment of worship. And so for 8 days, usually late November into December, for 8 days, Jews around the world celebrate Hanukkah, which has to do with the fact that the oil did not run out. And by the way, you say, is it found in the New Testament? Absolutely. It's called the Feast of Dedication. And you can read about the Feast of Dedication, and Jesus went up to the temple during the Feast of Dedication in the Gospel of John. So it's a reminder to the Jewish people, first of all, of Jewish patriotism, taking the temple in Jerusalem back from the bad guys, and God's miraculous supply of the oil, supposed to last one night, but by the hand of God, the light was kept shining for 8 nights in a row. That's why you have today the 8 nights of Hanukkah.
Okay, and that started when?
Last Friday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what a remarkable... I didn't know all that. I mean, I knew bits and pieces of it, but I didn't know it, Ray. Thank you for that story about the foundations of the Hanukkah celebration. So in the Jewish tradition, the Jewish faith, would that be a top five in terms of their remembrance of what God did for them?
It's not on the same level as, say, the Passover, which was prescribed by God. That's in the Old Testament, okay? So it's not on the same level of Passover or unleavened bread or tabernacles, because those were required by God. But it has become a part of Jewish celebration. I think that's the right word, Jewish celebration, a memorial to Jewish patriotism, and to the fact that these Jewish, Judas the Hammer, right? Uh-huh. Judas Maccabeus, he led the Jewish people to reclaim their temple and to cleanse it for the glory of God. So is it as up there with the Passover? No, but it's up there, and it's a cause for great celebration.
It's great, and Ray made mention of this, that this was prophesied in the book of Daniel. The prophecy that this would happen, this abomination of desolation, And so it happened in 165, but it also describes what the Antichrist yet to come, an event yet to come. The Antichrist is going to do the same thing. He will make peace with Israel. That'll last about 3.5 years. And then there is going to be this sacrifice of a pig in the new temple yet to be built. And then we know what happens after that is the great tribulation after the last 3.5 years of the 7-year tribulation. So there was this initial demonstration of the prophecy in 165, but yet to come is the Antichrist. And that's why we watch Israel and what is happening there.
Yeah, you know, how you can be an atheist in light of everything you've shared already, Ray, and just the existence of the Jewish people.
Yes.
Is, it you know, I know a lot of times atheists claim we Christians believe in, you know, some kind of fairy tale or something, but we don't believe in science or fact. I would say back at you because... the story of the Jewish people is still alive today. These are the same Jewish people, the Hebrews, the children of God, Israel. This is the same blood lineage as that dates back to the story that Ray was talking about right there. Yeah. So, you know, how do you explain it? How would you, Ray? I mean, I've mentioned that before, but how will somebody say, they're an atheist, and then would at the same time maybe acknowledge the Jewish story?
Well, they're simply left then to say, well, this was a coincidence, and this was a coincidence, and
wow.
This was a coincidence.
Okay, then.
So
all right.
You can either believe in the coincidence theory of history, or you can believe in the sovereign providential hand of God.
Amen.
Well, and then you look at the book of Exodus, and you see... you watch Charlton Heston, and you see the Ten Commandments, the movie, which was a great movie, by the way, which that movie at least introduced millions of people to the story of the God of the Bible, right?
That's right.
It was incomplete in the sense that it didn't have the New Testament, but that New Testament hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So, but you see how God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt.
Yes,
out of bondage, and gave them this land,
mm-hmm.
or returned them to this land. It's a supernatural story contained in the Bible. But as Ray said, unless you're just going to believe in 1,000 coincidences, you would have to say the story of the Bible is accurate.
Yes, and you know, a lot of people questioned the authenticity of Scripture. And then 1948 happened when you talk about the people of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, even in the Christian community, they some said, you know, God was through with the Jews. But then 1948 happened. Israel was reformed as a nation once again.
Miraculously.
And the Bible talked about the regathering of the Jews from all, they had been spread all over the world.
Right.
And and they're still coming back.
And here we are now today, 2023, and basically the whole world's against the Jews again.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep. So here we are.
Yeah.
The story continues, and mm-hmm. we're watching it in real time.
Yes.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What's the first news story, Chris, today?
This one almost sounds like a satirical story making fun of the individual I'm about to share on the show. While people in Boston are observing things like Hanukkah and many others are celebrating Christmas, the mayor of Boston wants to have a holiday party.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't want any white people there.
What?
Michelle Wu, who is Asian.
She's Asian.
Accidentally sent
out
an
Irish.
Invite. No,
that's not Irish.
She's not white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant.
Okay.
Her aide accidentally sent out an invite to all city councilors in Boston, and not just to the, quote, electeds of color. That's their words. The aide sent a follow-up email about 15 minutes later apologizing for the invite, clarifying that only people of color are invited. And the mayor defended this.
I read that. This is real, by the way. This is not a joke. It's the mayor of Boston, Massachusetts, a deep blue state, I might add.
Oh, yeah.
Where a lot of stop right there, Tim. Yeah, all right. So crazies, a lot of left-wing crazies live. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's one of the most historic cities in our country, right?
Yes.
Boston. And I've been there. But so the mayor of the city sends out an invitation. Now, it's a holiday party. It's not a Christmas party.
Correct.
Right. She wants to make clear that. And she wants to make clear that she asked her assistant sent out invitations to all the city councilmen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But forgot to omit the white people.
Mm-hmm.
So she went back and said, hey, I forgot that Christmas invitation we just sent. If you're white, you don't need to show up.
Yeah.
Is that what happened, Chris?
Basically, they essentially told them.
You know, that'll build city unity right there.
Right.
That's very. Mm-hmm.
Nothing like, unity in America.
Listen, these left-wing people like this that are, they're woke. They're the most divisive people in America.
Yeah.
It's like when they have this this national anthem, and they call it the Black National Anthem, mm-hmm. at sporting events. And I'm going, are black folks at the event not Americans too?
Mm.
We have to have a separate. Are we going to have separate national anthems for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. The whole thing about America is we're a melting pot of different colors, creeds, ethnicities, and we all unite around the flag to sing the national anthem to honor our country and those who've served,
yeah.
those who've died. And so to have different national anthems based on your ethnic background, just that is counterproductive to building unity.
Yeah. Can you imagine for a moment if there was a white male mayor of a Republican city?
Right.
And he said, we're going to have a party,
mm-hmm.
But only white males are invited.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that would fly, Fred.
No. Can you imagine, first of all, the mainstream media across this country, what they would do with that?
Yeah.
There would be an explosion. You would have the Al Sharptons and everybody else.
He would have already flown in or jumped out of an airplane to parachute in.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And she gets away by just saying, sorry that you white people on my council, there's seven of them. Sorry that you got the memo. They're still not invited.
I wouldn't want to have a Christmas party without the women anyway. Because, I mean, you seen the food men bring to these things?
Well, huh? That's a good point.
Yeah.
So she did not apologize, right, Fred? She hasn't.
No.
No, she's just going to. Now, is she married to a white dude?
I understand her husband is a white guy.
So is he going to be able to come?
He serves.
He's not an elected.
Huh?
So I guess
he's not an elected.
He's making deviled egg. He's making deviled
egg. Is it at her house? He's going to have to leave the house a couple hours.
Oh, what a mess!
Huh?
Hey, Connor,
honey, you go drive around. Go down the boat. Go bowling. You're too white to be at
this
party.
Go out for coffee and make sure it's a woke coffee shop.
That's right.
That you spend our money
at. It's ridiculous. These far lefties, I'm telling you, they're more divisive than any conservative.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
You just bingoed.
Yeah.
I have some audio here from somebody saying pretty much the same thing. Our Chad Groening did a story on this already, and he spoke with Brian Kemmerer of Mass Resistance. Hear what Brian has to say, clip one.
The left talks about racists, and they're the biggest racists there are. And it's everybody's talking about it. The strange thing is, to them, doing something that idiotic, it doesn't even cross their mind. But to normal people, they think, what a bunch of hypocrites. And how idiotic is it to only invite people to a party based on race?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next story, enough of that silliness. If you want to enjoy that, ladies and gentlemen, you just moved to Boston. And Ed used to live there.
Yes.
We'll ask him about this.
Okay.
All right, next up.
Let's do this because it's something that's taken a backseat to other things going on in the news cycle, but oftentimes what happens at climate conferences ends up impacting you, even though we are thousands of miles away from things. This also sounds like a joke, but I promise it's true. It's something that's been a push. There's been a push for most of my 10 or 13 years here. I've got some sound of Mark Morano.
10 or 13. That's a pretty big difference there.
I pulled a Biden, didn't I? I've got some audio of Mark Morano of Climate Depot talking about efforts in Dubai and other parts of the world where these climate alarmists want to give rights or a voice to the rocks and trees when it comes to various policies. Not making
it up. What are we about to hear?
Mark Morano talking about efforts to give rights or a voice to rocks and trees when it comes to our using lands. Clip 5.
We've all heard of human rights, civil rights, and women's rights.
The Financial Times reported essentially about white, wealthy Western nations buying up land in Africa as carbon offsets. So you have at least five African nations where 20% of their land is locked up. They can't develop it.
We've all heard of human rights, civil rights, and women's rights, but what about the rights of nature? A growing global movement seeks to give plants, animals, and entire ecosystems some of the same legal protections that humans have.
The concept is that, like humans, all living things and ecosystems have the fundamental right to exist and thrive, and that nature's rights, like humans, can be defended in court.
They're now giving voice to rivers, trees, and land. And obviously they can't speak for themselves, so where are the voice coming from? It's coming from self-important, self-appointed bureaucrats and activists who will speak on behalf of these inanimate objects.
That sounds like the guy that's on with Laurie Ingraham sometimes. So, what's the fellow's name?
Mark Morano. He has appeared on Fox many times on different programs. It could be.
So where are they trying to get this voice heard for the rivers and the rocks?
Well, when it comes to mankind's population growth, and we're using more land and wanting to do things and burn oil or whatnot, environmentalists, many of which are radical, want to make it to where the environment can have a voice, to where even the environment can sue to block things like fossil fuel development.
So can you subpoena a river?
Basically, there's actually been a push for the environment to be able to sue mankind over our growth and development.
I'm representing the spruce tree today.
The Stanford Cardinal will sue you.
My client is very upset that someone wants to chop me down for Christmas.
I know these climate activists are appearing different events and so forth in places around the world, and they're gluing themselves to the road and
famous paintings,
but things of that nature.
The irony with that is some of the glue is petroleum based, and then they used fossil fuels to get to the place where they're staging their protests.
You know what I would do?
Call them hypocrite?
No, I'd leave them there. They'll eventually call their friends. Hey, nobody's getting me out. Nobody's ungluing my hands from this road, and I want to go home.
You know, some of the people advocating for this are the same people that say the unborn baby is not a human being.
Right.
And therefore, we're not going to give a voice to that unborn baby, but we are going to give voice to a rock and a tree.
Yeah.
Same people.
All right. We're going to take a break right here and be back with more. Fellow that's the prosecutor, I want to talk about this when we get back for just a minute. The federal prosecutor who's handling the January 6th and the documents case relating to former President Donald Trump.
Jack Smith.
Yes, he's made a appeal to the United States Supreme Court, which is going to be very interesting to see what they rule. We're going to explain that when we get back from the break, and we hope that you're having a great day. It's Thursday again, December the 14th. We shall return momentarily. Much more news, including the story I just mentioned, to talk about after the break.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
The very first book in the Bible has some wonderful words for us. Here's a little short verse from the 28th chapter. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Let me share a story with you. Sam put on his top coat, picked up his briefcase, and walked to the door. Saying goodbye to the rest of the family, he proceeded to his car. He backed out of his driveway and headed down the road to the office. At the intersection, he looked both ways, and then he started across, and that's when it happened. There was a terrible screech, tires grinding on the pavement, coming to a sudden and complete stop. Sam jumped, looked toward his right to see a big tractor trailer bearing down on him. In an instant, his instinct told him to brace himself to prepare for a terrible accident. The truck was about to crash into his small foreign-made automobile. He braced and waited, but miraculously, the driver of the giant truck managed to get the big rig stopped just prior to the anticipated collision. With a sigh of relief and thankfulness, Sam uttered a quick prayer. Now, it's only fair to say that Sam was not normally a very religious man, living mostly by his own creeds and just not having much time or interest in the kid stuff, you know. But for some reason, he spontaneously let it slip. "Thank you, Lord," he said, suddenly remembering that there was someone beyond himself. Well, Sam and the driver of the truck got out and surveyed the situation. "Man," said the truck driver, "you're a mighty lucky person. Just a split-second difference in timing, and you very probably wouldn't be around this old world right now. You'd better be thankful that I had my brakes reworked just last week. I would hate to think what would have happened if I had not. And I started to put it off, but changed my mind at the last minute and went ahead. Buddy, you better thank goodness that you're still alive." "Mister," said Sam, "I've already thanked goodness." Well, in a few moments, Sam was on his way to the office again. At a service station along the route he took, he saw Bill. Bill was a friend of his who worked in the same office. Bill was also the religious guy in their group, a regular churchgoer. Sam wheeled in to speak to Bill and tell him about the truck. "Hey, Bill," hollered Sam out of his window as he pulled along his religious friend. "The Lord's really taking care of me this morning. I pulled out in front of this big truck, and the Lord performed a miracle and stopped it just before it got me. It sure is great how the Lord takes care of us, isn't it?" "It sure is," said Bill. "He performed a miracle for me this morning also." "He did?" said Sam. "What happened? Did you nearly get hit by a big truck like me?" "Well, not quite," said Bill. "He just kept me from pulling out in front of any big trucks." Strange how we can find him in the miracles and not in the everyday events, isn't it?
This has been My Turn with Don Weilman, a production of the American Family Association.
Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. 1 Peter 1:13.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is scheduled to be with us at 11:05 Central Time, so about approximately 30 minutes or so. We hope that that interview will take place. We've scheduled it. But you never know with these congressmen and senators when they're going to be called to a vote or committee meeting, or they decide they want to go for coffee. Who knows? But hopefully Senator Cruz will be our guest. I'm Tim Weilman with Fred Jackson and also Chris Woodward and Ray Pritchard, and we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Some of you are registering to go with us in June and September on our Spiritual Heritage Tours, and if you want to check that out, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. My wife and I, Allison, and Stephen and Beth McDowell, the Providence Foundation, we're going to be leading tour groups to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. A lot of fun there, a lot of history. And then we're also going to our nation's capital, seeing all the sites in our nation's capital, including George Washington's Mount Vernon. So, again, those trips are in June and September. If you want to read the dates and the itinerary, the cost, everything associated with those trips, in 2024, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. It's tours with an S.com, and check that out. All right, so I was reading yesterday, Fred, where Jack Smith, the federal prosecutor, has asked the United States Supreme Court to rule on whether or not a president has immunity from being prosecuted for crimes. Is that the way you understand it?
Yes. The argument that's coming from Mr. Trump's lawyers is that the charges against him related to January 6th relate to the time when he was still president of the United States. Their argument is that a sitting president is immune from prosecution. So they had put forward that argument. The special prosecutor, as you mentioned, Jack Smith, has said, okay, we want this to go to the Supreme Court to decide before we proceed. The judge in the case, Judge Junkin, who is, I think, an Obama appointee.
Federal judge.
Initially, you know, she said she disagrees with that argument, but.
What argument?
The argument that he is immune from prosecution.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. So, but she has put the current trial on hold.
Right.
Because of this petition that is going to the United States Supreme Court. It's going to be very interesting. Of course, he's not the president now, but the argument is, his argument, his team's argument, President Trump, former President Trump's argument, is that, all right, the events you're charging me with, I was still president of the United States, and I'm immune from prosecution while being president. We'll see how the Supreme Court goes on this.
Yeah, I think it's good for everybody that Jack Smith, the prosecutor here, is going straight to the Supreme Court. And it's good for Donald Trump's team, too, his legal team. The reason is this. If the Supreme Court says, yes, we agree a president is immune from prosecution for crimes or alleged crimes, then there's no point in going through with this trial. We just scrap everything, right? Save everybody a lot of time, energy, money. Just forget it, right? Because what they're trying to what Jack Smith is saying is if we go, we don't want to go through this whole trial and then it make it to the Supreme Court and then the Supreme Court say, well, we could have told you a long time ago that you can't prosecute a sitting president, right? So I don't know which way the Supreme Court will go on this, but I suspect they will say, no, a president is not completely immune from being prosecuted if he committed crimes, but I don't know that. They may say a president can do anything he wants to and not be prosecuted. I doubt they'll say that. Then you could say, well, Biden can do anything he wants to, and he can't be charged. Yeah. He can't be. Now there is a longstanding to law, right? That says, and this is, and maybe this is what Mr. Trump's attorneys are citing, a sitting president cannot be compelled, defend himself in court. A sitting president against a criminal charge or a civil charge, I guess. The only way to deal with a president, sitting president, if he's committed crimes, and this is what the Republicans are saying now, potentially about Mr. Biden, President Biden, is you impeach him.
That's right.
And that's how you get him out of office, is you impeach him. That's a political trial, so to speak, as opposed to a courtroom. Because if every president was subject to, having to go to trial all the time because he was being sued, you couldn't do your job.
That's right.
It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, or whatever. You couldn't do your job. So that's why we give immunity.
Yes.
To sitting presidents from court cases against mm-hmm. them. Is that mm-hmm. so? That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Okay.
It is.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. See what happens there. But I think it's good for everybody. Just. And that's the reason the federal judge here in this case has said I'm postponing or delaying mm-hmm. or changing the trial date until we find out from the United States Supreme Court what they rule here.
Yep.
Because if they rule, yes, a sitting president has immunity and Trump can't be tried for what happened on January 6th by virtue of that, then there's no point going on with this.
That's right.
But it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying it's a question.
Yep.
Why would you claim you're immune from
prosecution
if you didn't commit any crimes?
I guess the advice is this is an avenue we can use without incriminating ourselves.
You see my question?
I understand the question, and that's going to come.
I'm not saying Mr. Trump's guilty or not. I'm saying that does beg that question.
Yeah. Motivation for making the petition to the Supreme Court can be questioned, but I think their argument is on the books, a sitting president is immune from prosecution. And so we're going to have to wait and see. This is going to be interesting arguments before the Supreme Court. I hope we get to listen to them.
Yeah, and if they dismiss it, the Supreme Court says, "Yeah, he's immune."
Wow.
Then hey,
right?
Then Donald Trump will do a happy dance.
Yeah,
on that particular case, right?
Absolutely.
He's still got to deal with Georgia and the documents case mm-hmm. in Florida, but we'll see. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Chris, next story.
We as a country will have another big Supreme Court ruling next year on abortion. I say that because yesterday the Supreme Court decided it will hear appeals from the Biden administration and the maker of a chemical abortion drug known as mifepristone. The Biden administration and the drug manufacturer want the justices to reverse an appellate ruling out of the Fifth Circuit that would cut off access to the chemical abortion drug through the mail and impose other restrictions, even in states where abortion remains legal. Charlie Butts has been covering this. I've talked to some people about it. And we've been told at AFN that if the Supreme Court rules against this chemical abortion drug, it could cut the number of abortions in half overnight in these United States of America. This is an alliance.
How do we know that?
Because it's going to basically make it to where this drug won't be available. Can't be sent through the mail. Can't be dispensed.
What does the drug do?
It's part of the chemical abortion drug process that kills the baby in the womb. It's an Alliance Defending Freedom case out of the state of Texas. And I spoke with an attorney yesterday at Alliance Defending Freedom. His name is Kevin Baptiste. And he explains their abortion pill case that the Supreme Court, again, has agreed to hear. Clip 2.
Well, the FDA was entrusted by Congress to serve as the nation's drug keeper to determine what is safe and not safe. When Congress delegated that authority to the FDA, it gave specific instructions of how to approve a drug or make changes to a drug regimen. And here the FDA failed to follow the Congress and its instructions. And so that's why we brought our lawsuit. One is you have to actually study the regimen that you approve. The FDA in its 23-year history of this drug has never actually studied the approved regimen. It's always approved some other type of regimen with more safeguards and protocols. They're never in the approved regimen. It failed to study the pediatric population that it's approved for. It's supposed to, by law, study the effects of this drug on teenage girls who are allowed to take this drug, but they've never actually done that. And so we're challenging the FDA's actions with regards to that. And also there's a longstanding federal law that says you can't mail these drugs across state lines. The FDA authorized that in 2021, and that was the last straw, and that's why we brought this case.
Now, I did ask Mr. Baptiste, you know, if the Biden administration wanted the Supreme Court to hear this case and the Supreme Court has decided to hear it, does that lead ADF to believe the Supreme Court may be sympathetic to Biden's argument? He said, no, that's not the case. This is a controversial issue. They want to put an end to the dispute. So don't fret right now thinking, you know, the high court might rule in favor of Biden here in chemical abortions.
Okay. Anybody got anything to ask or add to that?
Well, thousands of women are using this. It's this drug in combination with another drug that's
used. Does it abort the baby like in the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that you, or 6 weeks?
Very early on in the pregnancy, yes. One of the big issues is that a person in state A can require this, can request this drug, and it goes across state lines, which is one of the arguments being used by ADF. That is not legal. But the other thing troubles me even more, that the FDA did not do adequate testing on this. As to the impact, let's say, on a teenage pregnant girl, what impact this might have on her eventual health after taking this drug. So this is very interesting. On the pro-abort side, they're very concerned with where this is landing in the United States Supreme Court, because we know the pro-aborts are very upset with the decision on Roe v. Wade, and they figure there is a bias against abortion on the existing Supreme Court. So we'll wait and see.
I have a way to loop in Ray on this issue. Ray, yesterday on our program called At the Core on American Family Radio, they spoke with Ruth Goodman, I believe it is, from the Center for Christian Virtue out of Ohio, and they were talking about the November vote that didn't go the pro-life's way there. And it was kind of a what do we do now discussion. And she said the church just has to be more involved on the abortion issue. They have to preach it. They have to be out there engaged. They have to be helping people. And that's why I thought of you, Ray, because is there, you know, how often do you find or hear that the abortion issue is addressed in churches beyond that one Sunday in January that we all talk about?
Well, after the Dobbs decision came down a year ago, the first legal test, the first vote took place. You know, we've had a number of these, but the first one took place right here in Kansas, which typically is a pretty strong red state. And not only did our side lose, but we lost convincingly. And yes, the other side spent millions more dollars, and frankly, they were very savvy, and you know, they used marketing well. But the truth of the matter is, the churches of Kansas, largely, even the well-known pro-life churches, a great many of them just had nothing to say about this. Well, if the church is not going to be salt and light, then we don't have much to complain about when the society decides to continue going down the road toward moral and spiritual Sodom and Gomorrah. So I want to say I agree with the interview that you guys did yesterday. We need the church to speak up. And let's be honest, we need pastors to gather their courage and speak out. Because if you're the shepherd, let's say the under-shepherd of the flock of God, how will the sheep know what to do unless the pastor is going to speak out for truth and for life?
Amen, brother. Preach it. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on AFR Next Story. Chris.
Well, you know, President Biden and his administration, they want to give a lot more of our tax dollars to Ukraine to fight the Russians in their war with the Russian invaders there. Meanwhile, Republicans wish Biden would just pay a little more attention and actually do something about the southern border. So Biden wants money for Ukraine.
Oh, he's done something about it, all right.
Republicans wish Biden was more concerned about the U.S. southern border than he was Ukraine's border. And I have some audio here of Senator James Lankford, a Republican from Oklahoma, talking to Fox News Channel today on the need for border funding and securing the U.S.-Mexico border, clip 4.
The biggest issue right now is we have people coming in to ask for asylum that don't qualify for asylum, and everybody knows it. Asylum is very difficult to get, so the first thing we got to do is change the way we do screenings for asylum. You can't go in the country for 5 years and then get a hearing. You got to do it at the border. We got to clarify what asylum is and what it is not, and we've got to have some way to be able to say, hey, if we're overrun by the cartels and they throw 11,000 people at us like they did yesterday, we have a way to be able to say, stop, we're not going to take any more people in, so that we control the border, not criminal organizations in Mexico.
I don't even know why this, like, this is one of those issues where I don't even know why government has to debate it.
Well, what's happened is the Biden administration wants more money for Ukraine, and it's about $106 billion package. But what the Biden administration has done is said, okay, to the Republicans, we'll throw in some money for border security. I put border security in quotation marks because when Biden talks about money for border security, he's talking about sending people down there to do more paperwork. You heard the figure there from Senator Lankford. in one day, 11,000 people, 11,000 in one day crossing our border. This is what's going on.
And they're not even being stopped anymore. I mean, it's just maybe giving them an application for asylum.
And that's and they're
like,
not.
Like, it's like as a Subway coupon.
That's about it. And here's the thing. Fox News has been down there. They're the only ones that really giving diligent coverage to this of the major networks. They did a survey, and it's mostly young males coming across the border. They talk to these people. Why are you coming to the United States? Not one of them said, I'm seeking asylum. Not one. I'm coming here because my uncle is here. Right. I'm coming here because I want to get a good job.
Yeah. No, Senator Lankford's right. The asylum process is broke and is a joke. And, you know, this is all about will. If Biden wanted, you know, he ran on it, basically. I'm going to let everybody in.
Going to invite a surge,
yeah,
is what he said.
So that's what we got.
Yeah.
In order to stop it, you're going to have to change administrations, basically. It seemed like to me. Now, here's the thing that back to the Ukraine for a minute. So you got there was three big issues here. There was money for the Ukraine war,
$60 billion.
Is that how much Biden's requesting, or
$60 billion more?
More. Hmm. Then you got the Israeli situation.
Yes.
I don't know. Is Israel even asked for money for the war? I don't know if they have or not.
They've asked for support.
Okay, but we already give Israel a lot of money,
right?
Mm-hmm. And they're probably the number one recipient of foreign aid already. So I don't even know if Israel said we need more money. But anyway, so the Republicans have said we're going to vote on those issues separately.
Mm-hmm.
Biden has said no, we want to join them together because he knows that the vast majority of Republicans will vote for more financial support for Israel in their war effort with. So so do we know how that's going to end up? Is that going to be two different votes or one different voter?
Well, what has happened is
that, and then the border security on the south that we just talked about in the U.S., that's also being tied in.
Senator Lankford is part of a small team of Republicans that are now negotiating in the last two or three days with the White House on this. Senator Lankford, in this interview with Fox this morning, said they are making some headway on making demands of the administration that some of this money has to go to securing the border, not doing paperwork for thousands of people who are saying are coming here asking for asylum.
I think it does have to, pretty much you need the House to agree on this because anything involving money involves the House. Mm-hmm. So Biden has to get the people controlling the purse, so to speak, in lockstep agreement here. Right. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything.
I tell you, I have friends who are totally against giving money to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And then I have other friends who I respect just as much who say, no, we've got to support Ukraine. Otherwise, Russia going to take over Ukraine, and then they're going to go into other countries. It's in our national interest, they would say. So I don't know. The accountability factor, too, on what these monies that we give Ukraine, these billions and billions of dollars, do we know how it's really being spent?
That is a question that some of the Republicans who are reluctant to give more money are saying. Where is the accountability for how this money has been spent? Because there have been reports that there are individuals high up in the Ukrainian administration that are becoming millionaires off of all of this money. But there are reports.
Yeah. All right. So, Ray, you have any thoughts on this?
You know,
one way or another?
Well, first of all, Fred, I don't doubt what you said is true. There have been people profiting off war since the beginning of time, right? So I understand that. It feels to me like the war in Ukraine has been in a stalemate. A few miles here, a few miles there. And it's hard to know. If we give, and we're going to, look, do we all agree we're going to give them more money? We're not on the side of Putin. Everybody understands that. We are on the side of Ukraine. We don't trust Vladimir Putin, and I don't think we should. But is there going to be are the Russians going to be pushed out of Ukraine? It doesn't feel that way. It feels that we're ending up almost where we started. Are we going to give them more money? Yes. I think far more pressing is the question of providing tools to Israel in their battle against Hamas. That's where I think that's where the danger is in the Middle East, and we've got to stand with Israel until they get that job done.
You know, just again, not I'm just like anybody else out there, just observing what's going on in Ukraine and Russia and that war, just from, you know, just from reading news reports and and hearing from different various people. And again, I have friends who say, no, no money at all for Ukraine because we don't have it to give. We have to buy. And I understand that. And but I just, this is me talking, okay? Zelensky, is that his name?
Yes.
Right.
What's his first name?
Vladimir.
It's the same as Putin, first name?
It's spelled differently. Okay. I think that may be a Ukrainian-Russian reason.
Okay. Okay, I don't know. I know he was a comedian and an actor, and then he was a politician. Then he became the
president. He's a good communicator, Tim. You put him in front of a camera, he's good.
I'll just say this again. This is just me talking. Okay, I admire that guy. I admire that guy, and I'm not saying I'm forgiving money to the Ukraine endlessly. I'm just talking about on a personal level, because he was. I remember when Russia rolled in, and they engaged and started the bombing Ukraine. I remember that video he did when it was he and two or three others, and they said, "By the time I may be dead tomorrow." I remember them recording that.
Right. They're very dramatic.
Very dramatic. I may be dead tomorrow, but then my admiration for him personally, again, I don't know all his politics or anything like that. I'm just saying the courage he displayed in the face of one of the mightiest armies in the world besieging your country. Mm-hmm. It would have been easy to just get on a jet and hightail out of there. You know what I'm saying? But he and his comrades and their countrymen decided, no, we're going to stand up and fight Putin and his military, even if it means we die.
Yeah.
Well, look, you got to give credit to the Ukrainians, because I think Mr. Putin thought the Russian tanks were going to roll in there to a relatively easy.
Everybody did.
Everybody did.
Everybody was saying, give this a month to 6 weeks, Ukraine will surrender, and there'll be it'll be Russian flag flying over Kyiv, right?
Coming up in 2 years.
Yeah. So, do you understand what I'm saying, Ray?
100%. And Mr. Zelensky has been a very courageous leader. As to where the money's gone, Fred, how are we ever going to know the answer to a question like that?
I'll tell you one thing. Zelensky is not wasting it on suits, because every time that dude pops up somewhere, he's wearing a sweatshirt and fatigues.
He doesn't believe it. You're right. He doesn't. Well, you know, he. I know the Ukraine has a reputation preceding the war of being a very corrupt country. So that is in the backdrop here, and that's in the minds of a lot of people who are saying, why do we want to continue to give money to a country that has a reputation of being very corrupt? And I fully, totally understand that. Well, we'll be back in 5 minutes after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.